Micro Effect, Kamiyai, Idaho, where every day is a holiday.
Yes, sir.
Where every paycheck is a fortune.
Yes, sir.
Kamiyai, Idaho, where every meal is a banquet.
Yes, sir.
Where your instincts will serve you better than your government.
Yes, sir.
I can't hear you.
Yes, sir.
The Micro Effect, live.com. The Micro Effect, a worldwide broadcast on the internet and on KU band satellite. Telstar 5, Transponder 5, themicroeffectlive.com. Don't miss it.
Yes, sir.
All right, folks, welcome to the story behind the story on the Micro Effect. Dr. Truot is not going to be here until next Wednesday, so you're stuck with myself, Mr. Clint Richardson, who will be filling in until then. Welcome once again. Now, as promised, I've tried to get together some guests for the week that are out there fight, not just talk, walking the walk, as they say. People who do and practice what they preach. Oh, you know, the salt of the earth, if you will. On that note, I would like to introduce you to one of my favorite people on this earth. Perhaps the saltiest of the bunch, if you will. Mr. Hal Anthony from Oracle Broadcasting. Hal, how are you this fine morning?
You're just too kind, Clint. Thank you for inviting me on your broadcast to explain the salt of the earth and more.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we have a lot to talk about, so we're get right into it. Now, I've been on air with Hal a few times and always really, really enjoy our conversations. Today, I want to talk about what Hal does for a living. That is, Hal is a miner, and very, very respected miner, and well respected with his knowledge of mining law, as well as U.S. code, which is one of the things that we talk about quite often. Now, I'm going to set the mood here one of the things I've been looking into for my next movie is actually what is called the Enabling Act of State constitutions. I find this to be extremely, extremely interesting, and I was hoping that Hal, you'd be able to comment on this. I'm just going to read a few, and I want people to keep in mind as they're listening to this that this is the case with all state constitutions. The only ones I can't find them in are actually the original 13 colonies. I'm sure there's a backstory to that, and I think I know what it is. But we're going to ask Hal about that. So I just wanted to read a few of these. Now, keep in mind that when the Constitution was written for each state, so we're talking about the state constitution, the Enabling Acts created for the ratification of that constitution. So a territory was being transferred to a state. It's basically what was happening. Now, when we go and we actually start reading these things, it's kind of frightening when I actually read them. And the wording is very, very similar in each one. So I'm just going to read a few of them. This is from the Colorado State Constitution Enabling Act, Section 4. The Constitutional Convention Requirements of the Constitution. It says, secondly, that the people inhabiting said territory do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands lying within said territory. Same shall be and remain at the sole and entire disposition of the United States. So people, to become a state, arbitrarily agreed through this contractual document, this constitution, I assume it's a contract, that I'm not still unclear about that, that they forever agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to unappropriated public lands. In the Utah Constitution, it states almost verbatim the same thing, that the people inhabiting said state do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated public lands, and that title thereto shall have been extinguished by the United States, shall remain so until that title shall have been extinguished by the United States, and subject to the disposition of the United States. And then finally, we come to New Mexico, which, another thing I find, it just keeps going, that people inhabiting the said proposed state do agree and declare that they forever disclaim all right and title to the unappropriated and ungranted public lands lying within the boundaries thereof. And it also references Indian land, which ask any Indian, they'll tell you they've been on a reservation, which is actually a prison, ever since. Interestingly enough, in each of these constitutions as well, but specifically the New Mexico one, the fourth requirement says this, and I kind of find this both amusing and ironic. It says that provisions shall be made for the establishment and maintenance of a system of public schools, keeping in mind that public school system is, of course, the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto, which shall be open to all children of said state and free from sectarian control, and that said school shall always be conducted in English. That's humorous, ironic, if I've ever heard. Now, Hal, you are an expert at public lands, Title 43 of U.S. Code. Why don't you explain what this is all about?
Well, you started way early on that, and again, always bring us into an area of great discussion, or a time that we can have quite a bit of discussion. Title 43 is the United States Code for what the Bureau of Land Management manages lands pretty much west of the Missouri. We go east of the Missouri. You're talking about the 13 colonies. They were disposed prior to this, at least the mining laws, as most people understand it. But a lot to discuss here. Let me just kind of go through a couple things. And it's what caught my ear when you were talking. I'm listening for the what we call the mineral estate. Where was it? Where is this thing? And when was it disposed? And what happened? And you got into the interrelationship between the states and the federal government. And you said the one statement one of the Constitution was until title extinguished. So I want to point that out, and we'll get back to that. That's going to be very important for the mineral estate. But I want people to understand that. And you, Clint, again, I just appreciate what you've done. You jumped into this, the black and white, as I say. You got to get the black and white in your eyes. You did. You read this stuff. You research it. You think about it. You put it together, and you make great videos to explain to people what's going on. And you're finding out that we're pretty much a deceived people. We pretty much live in an open-air prison. We're no pretty much of the Native Americans. We are the Native Americans. I'm not any different than that. I just didn't come with an indigenous label on me. But this is what they start doing to us in status. But the constitutions are, in fact, contracts, or international contracts, in fact. They can also be considered compacts or treaties. So this one you're looking at here, and this is public schooling, public education works. It's P-E-W, Pew, it stinks. My public education told me that the people created the territories by their will, and that they would make the state from the territories that were laying in the unappropriated lands. Well, somebody who was a lot more learned than I was quite a long time ago, and I've been doing this research probably going on a little over a couple decades now, trying to figure out where America went, essentially, is where I started. Somebody who was very wise out of Arizona told me, I asked him, I found out he was about, and I was talking to his son, and I asked his son to ask his father a question about why was it that these admission acts were reading the way they were. They made no sense at some level. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. The answer came back to me that because of public education, I was reading them wrong. That you have to understand that these admission acts, and this is not necessarily the enabling act, but it's an admission act, which would bring the state together, the ability of the state together. It wasn't the people. It wasn't the people that created the act. It was Congress dictating what the state would be and how those people would take as a state the unappropriated land.
Well, and it's important to note that all of these are almost identical. There is very little distinction between each constitution. They all say the same thing, pretty much.
And you see uniformity way before the Uniform Commissions Act and the Bar Association. So again, we may be hearing this repeatedly. We've been duped as a people that these uniform applications were actually coming from one place or a lineage of places, all been handed to people. And essentially, what we're looking at, when you look at an admissions act, you're looking at Congress's determination of how that land would be taken. And what you read in the Enabling Acts is exactly what you're seeing, is that Congress dictated that it would take the unappropriated lands, which I didn't understand. I'm still a little questioning what an unappropriated land is within a territory that's ceded to a state. But at any rate, they did to pull it back, and the people essentially were required to agree to that. Now, I'm going to suggest to you something that the people may or may not understand. We found a couple states that never ratified their admission acts, and so there may be a grounds to say that the territorial lands that are called states may not actually be states. But that all kind of gets washed under the bridge a long way after. But we get up into 1953, where about every state of the Union turned under, again, a Uniform Model Business Corporation Act. By the end of 1953, all states had agreed to this, and it was just in time for the 1954 income tax rules that changed from 1939, and you're starting now to see the new corporate style come right into effect, and it's almost a layer. But let's get back to the Equal Footing, or the Enabling Act, and all the equal footing for the 13 states. But you start to see how long ago this equal footing and the power of the central government was, and that it could be a dictator underneath this constitution that everybody believes gave us freedoms and all this other stuff. When in fact, when you look, that constitution was essentially a commerce compact, a political commerce compact, which was in Article 6 explains to us that it defeats everything in the Declaration of Independence, almost makes it a wish list. But from there comes the sole disposition of the United States of all the unappropriated lands from which this mineral estate or what mining law dealt with.
Well, you know, and this brings up another thing that actually you pointed out to me quite a while ago, which I still just think is hilarious. And that is in Title 42, which is the they call it. It's so funny because it's called the Statement of Equal Rights. This is basically civil rights. Yeah. And it's one of the things that really, you know, threw me into the next level when you showed me this particular part of U.S. Code. And I just want to read that and then try to make understand. Now Bert, who I'm going to interview on Tuesday, says that the only people that were ever free in this country were the slaves that were turned into free men after they were released from their indentured slavery. That was the only time that they were actually, there was actually a free people in America, and then they became citizens, thinking that they're getting all these rights. Well, let me just read what the Statement of Equal Rights is, according to U.S. Code. Again, this is civil rights. And it sounds good at first, but we get to the end, oh boy. All persons within the jurisdiction of the United States shall have, and that's the federal government, shall have the same right in every state and territory to make and enforce contracts, to sue, be parties, give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit of all laws and proceedings for the security of persons and property as is enjoyed by white citizens. So, this is the part scary. Then it says, and shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and extractions of any kind and to no other. So that is what happens. Have equal rights with white citizens. You become subject to like punishment, pain, penalty, taxes, license, and extractions of every kind. Congratulations on the civil rights achievement.
Well, it's exactions. Actions means extortion. It's one of the few words in the language that actually has one meaning. That's just, and then the other thing is this is kind of how they've got us all messed up. Lots of words have lots of meanings. But that one word, exactions, is pretty poignant in that section because it only has one meaning, and it means extortion. So what you see is your civil rights, and anybody can read this for themselves. It's pretty, like you say, it brings you to this next level of understanding of the prison we live in.
Let me just repeat. Title 42, Chapter 21, Subchapter 1, Section 1981.
Right, you just go type into a search engine, your favorite. I use DuckDuckGo now because I don't like Google with what they do. But the 42 USC 1981, if you just type that in, you'll get the section. You go right to it and read it for yourself. And this is, again, the black and white in your eyes. It starts to turn the things that you thought you knew up on its head. And you have to make a – Bert might have something going on there, although I'm not so sure really when you get into all peoples that are not that, you know, again, when someone said that they were – one of four said that they were free, they weren't when they were really subjected by another people. So you're looking at an occupying force or a conquered people continually. However, Bert makes a very good observation in that what happens in the civil rights that all would be equal was the extension of this extortion that the governments do to people onto the freedman.
Yeah, I mean, again, when you actually take off the rose-colored glasses, start reading your constitution, start reading your state constitutions, and start reading U.S. code, it's some of the most frightening stuff I have ever come across. I mean, fiction could not be more frightening than reality here. I read these statements and these acts and constitutions, and I'm amazed that somehow, I'm amazed that somehow I never could see it for what it was. I mean, I take even the 13th, which again kind of applies to this civil rights thing, which everybody identifies without really reading it as that, you know, well, this outlaws slavery and outlaws indentured servitude, and yet when you read it, take off the rose-colored glasses, you find that what the 13th Amendment says is that if you're convicted of a crime, you can become an indentured servant or slave of the state. All you have to do is go through the court system, the bar, and be convicted of a crime. And the 13th Amendment says you can be a slave, but it says, hey, you people out there, you citizens cannot own slaves, but the state can. The state can, and now we have the privatized prisons that they're going to, and they're trading those prisoners, and they're using them for cheap labor, and what a system, what a racket, what an enslaved people we actually are. And again, the only way to see it is to take off rose-colored glasses, go read all the things that you think read before, and it's quite eye-opening.
Right. Well, there's nothing, you know, we'll hear it. We hear all the government tells us, it's the public media, public notice. But to me, public means government under the administrative uniform commercial rule. So when you see public media, you're actually looking at government media. That kind of gets us real quickly beyond the fact of what the media is actually all about. And this is the media in all kinds of forms.
Well, now,
I just wanted to finish that. Nothing has outlawed voluntary slaveries and voluntary servitudes. And this is really where they get us because we don't know. We weren't told or explained, or we didn't know to go look for our lawful remedies, which would get us to avoid that servitude. So this is how it's really us doing it to ourselves, whether by ignorance or false understandings or action without knowledge.
Well, now, is it a true statement? Well, first of all, public opinion, technically, public opinion generally refers to what the courts decide as far as what public opinion is. The courts basically interpret what public opinion is, and then the media sort of screws it all up. But is it a true statement to say that every single person that is in, well, maybe not every single person if you're if you've gone through a jury trial, but every person in prison right now, basically, especially victimless crime victims, are they there voluntarily?
Yeah, I have to say that they are. That's not just That's not to discount the corruption in the system anyway, but essentially that you are. There's remedies that you get into the law, that you can get into the law that if they were looked at, if it wasn't rule o' law, but law that ruled, you'd have a way to avoid this real easily, all in status and jurisdiction. But there, this is really where I focus when I'm doing mining law and trying to protect miners and essentially myself too, because we're all the miners are being, there's an assault against mining in this country right now. Talk about salt of the earth. We're being assaulted right now. the miner is being kicked down because it's the last remnant of what, wealth creation is, actual possession of the soil, which makes law of the land a whole new issue. They wanted to destroy that, and it gets rid of, since it is actual wealth, it gets rid of livelihood, it gets rid of independence, and it gets rid of the example of against where the system is taking this. We hear it all the time in various words, sustainable development or the financial constructs that we see, a sovereign debt, which is an oxymoron. You can't be sovereign and be a debtor. No different than, let me get back to this thing about the Title 42, civil rights. Remember, who promoted that was Martin Luther King when it finally burst through. Remember one thing he said was, he said that it wasn't the color of one's skin, but the content of one's character. I want to get back to that because it's important. And he was promoting civil rights. And you have to understand that character means obligation. So when you get the right dictionary and you get it old enough, when that law was made, you find out what he was saying was it's the content, what you hold as your obligation is your civil rights. And now you go look back at Section 1981 and you see that they're saying what you hold as a citizen of the United States after 1868 was that you hold an obligation. Obligation that you and a promise that you will be extorted against, and that's all you have to rely on. That's the only thing you get to do. Now, that's why when you go into the courts, you don't have a constitutional right because they're dealing through civil rights, which is a privileged imposition of an obligation. That alone is a voluntary servitude in its face. We don't understand a lot of it. If you live in a conquered nation, if there is a remedy, it would be very slim. If you live in an occupied territory, the remedies would be slim, but they would be a little bit greater. So that we don't have any kind of dictates what it is that the kind of territory that we live in, despite the labels and despite the promotion of freedom and possession and private property and this and that. That may not actually be the case. And I just want to keep getting back to but the mining law is that example that shows you how it ought to be. And that's, I think, what one of the main last vestiges of our freedom might be. As I continue to say, said this for years, the microcosm of the miner is the macrocosm we call America. As the miners go, all of America will go.
Can you say the same thing about farmers?
Farmers are salt of the earth, too, and they absolutely accept that. The distinction is the soil. It's actually that soil. The miner in the granted minerals, which is being defeated right now, and the miners don't step up here, and people who appreciate freedom, if they don't step up to support miners in any way, you're going to watch the demise of the possession of the soil. And I'm talking about there's two estates in soil. The servient estate, which is the surface, and the dominant estate, which is the mineral estate. And farmers and ranchers maintain, for the most part, it depends on how they receive their patent, if they have a patent. They received underneath most of that land disposal laws, again, dictated by Congress, or as dictated by Congress, they received only the surface estate. They did not, like the miner claiming granted minerals, they do not include, the farmers and ranchers did not obtain the full estate, or in other words, the servient and the dominant. So that's the distinction in a miner. He owns the minerals into the ground, essentially underneath the old terminology to the center of the earth like a pie-shaped wedge, and then he owns the surface also. That's right out of the mining law. Now, they've been trying to defeat the surface rights for many, many decades, but now they're going to start taking the minerals itself. They're going to try to encroach and cause a fiduciary breach on trust that was established in 1866 by trying to force miners now into a mineral leasing condition, which it was shown. The reason why they went to the 1866 mining law was because the mineral leasing failed, utterly, miserably failed right before that. And they said, well, we got to get the minerals into production. So they said, well, let's as an incentive, let's give the miners the land. So let's settle the land by giving the miners the complete estate.
A perfect explanation. I mean, you've really just hit the nail on the head because, and farmers are going through the same thing. You know, my local farmer here in Utah is going through eminent domain. They're taking little parts of the land. They're changing the, one of the clever uses of Agenda 21. And it's actually a practice. It's called a best practice. Comes straight down from United Nations all the way through federal government and then down into the municipalities and the state. And they actually go and they change the master of the city. So it's the planning folks and the financial officers that get together and they change the plans of the city. And then they'll go in and they'll start eminent domaining people's property, whether it's to widen the roads or to lay, in this case, it's to lay track for trains, but they're taking this guy's property little by little until he's going to have nothing left. But they're threatening his mother's home. And keep in mind, we're in Utah here. This guy was a scout for Brigham Young, so he has a history, a family history with the church that pretty much is the government here. That doesn't matter to these. These people are vicious and cruel, and they are only interested in profit. That's what it boils down to, is changing this area that he lives into a government center where there's a library and a senior center, and now they're going to take for a gym. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. The takings that are taking place in this state, especially considering the amount of land that's in this state, it's very sad. To see it happen and to see that this farmer has no is no recourse. I mean, he does, but he just doesn't know and he doesn't want to fight. And he's not getting just compensation. The state valued his property they took last at $5 million. He got $2 million from the city. So I mean, we are, you know, it's so depressing to think that we've been fooled all of this time, all the way through high school, learning about our Constitution, not knowing, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Hal, but isn't the definition of a constitute or a constitutor is actually a debtor? You are a debtor if you're in a constitution?
Just a contract causes you to be an obligee. So in that regard, yes, and this is what you got to be careful of. You got to look at all these terms in the context and purpose for which they were made. The author of those words will be the most reliable source. So we have to be very careful. I don't just throw a lot of this stuff and just say, okay, this is a one size fits all. You really have, especially in the mining law, you really have to get right down to the point of who's the power that conveyed the land, what quality was that title, and what exactly went. So this is the same thing in making all these words. And so we could kind of use blanket statements, like maybe even go to street language, like men, you and I might learn, you know, have learned in our public education, delusion, or we can go to certain dictionaries. But even so, any body of law will have definitions. Those definitions are actually more definitions. So we got to be careful. In general, I would have to agree with you. It would be an obligation, but that makes sense to me in the context of a contract, creating obligations, responsibilities, and duties on both sides of a voluntary agreement made at an arm's length transaction.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. Here with Hal Anthony, a true salty miner of the earth. We'll be right back on.
What's going on?
I just got my shipment of freeze-dried food from the freeze-dry guy. I was laying away our family supplies here.
Dad, you're not planning to have an emergency, are you?
You don't plan to have them. They happen on their own. You plan a response.
Like what? What could go wrong?
Well, imagine you go to the grocery store and it's empty.
Dad, that's paranoid.
That's possible.
It's paranoid.
It's not paranoid to prepare. It's perfectly prudent.
Okay, Pops, I get your point.
Keep it.
But, Dad, what if we never need it? Won't it go bad?
Oh, no, son. You'll have babies of your own, and this stuff will still be as good as it is today. And it's good, too. Believe me, I've had some.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Dad, maybe we could have a practice emergency.
Test the food out, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let's hope we don't have a real emergency, son. But if we do, I intend to survive. And I intend for you to survive, too.
Thanks, Dad.
I better get the rest of this put away.
Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com.
I have bought a few bottles of Heart and Body Extract. I have to say that it certainly does work.
That's what Jack from Michigan had to say after his experience with heart pain and what he did to treat it with Heart and Body Extract.
I actually had a huge heart flutter, also having some edema around my ankles and very worrisome clot in my right leg that would happen from time to time while I was trying to sleep.
Heart and Body Extract is all natural with no negative side effects. It will help repair or correct past problems associated with the heart and body circulation.
After my second bottle of Heart and Body Extract, all problems are now gone.
Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
I ordered a third bottle of Heart and Body Extract for maintenance as I want to keep everything working.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
America, politicians are about to vote on the creation of a police state and a permanent state of war everywhere on Earth, including the homeland, Mein Führer. The U.S. Senate will be voting on a bill that will give this president and every future president the power to order the military to pick up and imprison, without charge or trial, civilians anywhere in the world, including America. Let's just go over that again because it may seem insane or unhinged at first. The American president wants the power to arrest and detain anyone, anywhere, indefinitely, without charge or trial, forever. Yes, it still sounds insane.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent, horrifying news story. I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
www.themicroeffectlive.com.
Do not be distracted by the beautiful celebrities.
Themicroeffectlive.com.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
Ooh, could that be email coming my way?
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Your connection for information on hosts, advertising, promotion, sponsorships, and much more. www.themicroeffectlive.com.
I want the truth!
Themicroeffectlive.com.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
www.themicroeffectlive.com.
Well, welcome to America, amigo.
Hoo-ah!
Welcome back to the story behind the story. If you're looking for Truot, he is not here, but he will be back next Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. Until then, I'm Clint Richardson filling in, and with me today is Hal Anthony. Now, Hal, I want you to tell me a little bit about yourself. Now, you're I always find I always get a kick out of the name of your show and your Skype, your phrase is behind the woodshed. Start off before we get into mining too much. How did you get into mining? How did you become such a guru? Was it a family affair, or how did that happen?
Well, they're kind of separated. I don't know if I'm such a guru more than I've found that. Again, in my quest to find out where America went started by a rotten traffic ticket, like anybody might run across. And I was looking at, you've heard these recent killed by cop situations. Well, I was just going to a barbecue one day long, long time ago, a couple of decades ago. And I got pulled over on a bogus setup, as we now hear is just customary. And I was literally, within moments, was surrounded by five cops who were going to take me down. Well, somehow I don't know how it happened, but I survived that incident. Just a complete surprise. Well, that started, I said, this can't be happening in America. Where did America? Well, so that started me researching the law, and I ran into the legal library when I was going to fight my fight this ticket, because it was just such an insult. I found some people also in the library that showed me how to access the courts, and it's really not that hard. Well, when I saw how easy it was, and it's not easy on the prosecution, but it's easy to get the court to make your argument, to assert your remedies, whether or not there's a corruption, you get to jump in. That started this process over, like I said, over a couple decades of research. Well, so getting through that time, I've seen quite a bit of things. I've actually been through the courts quite a bit. Running the experience down so you have a wisdom, you know, experience and knowledge and understanding to some level. So that, and at near the, well, the last maybe 6 years, a friend of mine asked me, he goes, there's something wrong with these permits against mining. Can you look at them? And that's where I moved in and focused primarily now on the mining law and took everything that I'd seen before and focused. So my focus on that kind of gave me an insight that no one else has had. And I think as I've told you before, the mining law is a memory that's just about lost. I may be one of the few people that actually has gotten a bulk of it back, and I'm just trying to tell people about it. Now, my experience in mining comes from, it started a long time ago. It has nothing to do with really the law, because at the time we got into mining, I was just a little guy, and my family was in mining, and we were into placer mercury mining. And at the time, I wouldn't have known the difference. I was just a little one, but I remember being around mercury. I guess I have to, as I do in my broadcast, I give a product liability warning. You might be listening to an idiot. I played with mercury. But the point is, when you get later on, you find out the fact that mercury itself is not poison. It's really what it does in the biosphere that then gets put back into our system. So anyway, mining has been in me for a long time, and the business of mining has been with me for a long time. And it's just recently, in the last 6 or so years, I've now turned to the law, which actually created that ability, and suppose it should protect it if we can get enough miners to step up, and people too. The rancher you're talking about, or the farmer you're talking about, he's got the surface, and it's not as powerful as having the minerals. If he has the minerals, he should be actually looking to that. And that would give him a whole lot more value they'd have to pay for. But I just wanted to go back to that. And I don't know about any answers except that you have to fight. So if he won't fight, the battle, it's over. There's nothing there. If he doesn't know his remedies, it's over. If you have no remedies, you have no right. I mean, you have to know about property. You have to know how to put it up and defend it, even if it looks impossible. Eminent domain is another proof that the Constitution was not created to enable a free people, but to empower a government. Because eminent domain allows the government to come back in and take the property with the basics of what they what it determines as they, but in it, this entity that has workers inside it, it can come by so-called due process and just compensation to take property. But let me offer something to listeners that people may not quite understand. Just because the government, and a farmer may not be in the best position, but the miner certainly is because of that mineral. And if the farmer can find mineral, he might have a better chance here to defend this. The government can't just come because they have a hearing and then pay you and take. The government has to show, those that come in the name of the government to take have to show a greater, better, a higher and better use than what the land was conveyed for in the first place. That's what you see in the kilo, but the Supreme Court changed it now. So we got to kind of adjust the view. We have to understand where the court's going to go with it. But if they come up, they have to, the government, those that come underneath this ability to steal land, but called eminent domain, they can't just say they just need it. They have to prove that it's more, higher and better use than what the property was conveyed for. And for the miner, not the farmer, because he just has a surface estate, but for the miner, that is the minerals. And for the miner, and for the people that are taking notes and listening to what I'm saying, that brings you into a national defense and security status that's very difficult for the state and the government to bring a higher and better use that has not yet been brought forward.
Well, I think it's important to state here, first of all, that eminent domain truly gets its roots from the Fifth Amendment, which is supposed to be a right, but of course it is. Well, again, you take off the rose-colored glasses, you see that basically the Fifth Amendment says that your life, liberty, and property can be taken with, as you say, due process and with just compensation. Due process, of course, comes from the courts. Now, the courts, the judicial, which was supposed to be the least powerful branch of government, even in the time of the Founding Fathers, when you read their writings, their Federalist and Anti-Federalist, you find that the courts quickly became the most powerful part of government, and that is who is deciding whether what is just compensation and what the due process of law states about taking property. This is called the Takings Clause, and it is the Fifth Amendment. Again, if you go read it, without the rose-colored glasses. But it's. I think it's also very important to know that what you just said, when we break it down into simple terms, this is coming from an international body called the United Nations. This is Agenda 21 that is actually being used, because what's happening is that the Declaration, the International Declaration of Human Rights, which is very similar to a constitution. It is a declaration of human rights, which one could change the word rights to privileges. What is happening is that national, or excuse me, international declaration of human rights is replacing all other constitutions. And when you get to the real nitty gritty of what that thing says, one of the most important aspects of it is to change two things. One of those is the right of the individual. The right of the individual must be subservient to the collective need. So that includes the other thing, which is property, private property. There is no such thing as private property when you're talking about the Declaration of Human Rights, because private, everybody, collective, is the property owner. So your property, when we're talking about this tier of importance, mineral rights and minerals and mining being the top tier use of land, farming being a close, second or third, and everything else falling under that. Well, in this case,
I would have to say it has to be second in some regard on the national sense, because without food, your armies don't move. And you see what we're talking, exactly. Military. We're talking defending oneself.
Exactly. And so when we take into consideration what's happened on international level, the governments in these treaties now, treasonous treaties with the United Nations, replacing the traditional doctrines that we have, you see where this is coming from, because again, the collective takes precedent over the individual. So when they're taking this farmer's land bit by bit to widen the road or to put a train track in or to make a school, they took part of it to make a school, that benefits the community. That's the excuse. They are saying that the community, the good of the people of the community, usurps and overrides good of the individual. And it's very important to know that's where it's coming from, is the international body.
Well, this is the soft law position, and this is how they're doing it. In fact, you'll notice when you listen to words and you hear the word tenure, T-E-N-U-R-E, you'll know that there's no property rights there. And this is what most people who have property that have bought and agreed to take by deed, any kind of deed in the state, they're taking a tenure. In other words, it's a servitude. It's a rental. They haven't acquired the land as an assignee of the conveyance from the government directly. And then what the state does, and any government will do, and you use the perfect word. I was thinking about it myself. The word excuse. The government now has learned, and their lawyers, and they're actually not lawyers, they're attorneys. They've learned to use the excuse of municipal power. And I have to suggest to you, you have to look at what they do, and you have to do it yourself. Again, this is where the highest and best use comes to when you look at some of this land. Now, and I can't say it's going to help the farmer. But it's harder to say how much is a food worth in an international sense to one local land that is being imposed by this soft law that's come through county code. It's not international anymore. It's just the influence that was given to local people to bring in certain laws which were able to hit to impose this way, and then most people just fold like, you know, like a cheap suit, and then it overwhelms them. But if the farmer, well, let's just go to the minerals. Let's say the farmer has a full estate. He's got the mineral estate also. And they have to compensate you for it just on one. So let's say they can take it. Let's say that he doesn't assert a better right. They have to compensate for whatever the minerals are, the value of the minerals too. And this gets to become so expensive as a method of a tactic that the minerals are so valuable. No matter where you are, you can see how valuable they are, that even the United States government itself that can print any amount of dollars, a so-called dollar, the FRN, the evidence of debt, this credit debt thing that they have going, they can print those without measure, and that's the problem with that they can only, even with that power, they can only go and purchase surface estates, let's say in places like New England or Philadelphia in particular. I'm thinking about the Allegheny Forest, or the Menard Run oil case of 2009 showed that the United States government went into a national forest and they did in fact purchase the surface. And they purchased it with whatever they purchased it, but they could only afford to buy the surface. They couldn't afford the minerals underneath. So here's another aspect of this, that when people understand what the actual value of their property is and can speak it, can assert that, they're going to probably do a whole little bit better on top of the fact of asserting the higher and best use and then forcing what is better. Do your people eat or travel down another pavement or a highway? I don't know. That could be for some jury to decide. But if nobody asserts these things, you're going to be run down by this soft law that is following this agenda that everybody can read. They go to the UN website and read all the parts of it, which does not agree. It's cultural Marxism. Anybody wants to look up what sustainable development is? In fact, I've got my first six broadcasts. When I moved to Oracle Broadcasting a year and a half or so ago, I did strictly on terms regarding what they use in Agenda 21 to get them people to hear the words to let them know what we're moving into. And so we're moving into cultural Marxism. There is no property rights in cultural Marxism. All the vocabulary that's used, the meta language, lacks property. And if you don't have property, you don't have any rights. So I don't know what the human rights is. A human is a monster, if you look at the right dictionary, one without inheritable blood. Well, if you don't have an inheritable blood, how do you get a property and convey it by air, by an airship? This is granted underneath the mining law. So this is real property stuff. And this is why the mining law is the last vestige of what an example might be for how we're going to stop this. But again, it's just us learning this stuff. We're coming late to the race, and we got to get back in the race. And we're being overwhelmed by organized people that do have a plan. It is a conspiracy. And I'll tell you that, as I heard from a South African caller to our network on another host broadcast, he said that the conspiracy that you see, these conspiracy theories, are actually business plans when they're going into effect. And this is one of the ones that is about taken down everywhere. So you in Utah, you've done an excellent expose of the police department, the sheriff's department, being subsumed by this power. This not a power, it's just an influence that becomes powerful because it gets funding from the people that it's going to enslave.
Sure, yeah, we lost our, I mean, we still have an elected sheriff, but the entire department got transferred over into another Agenda 21 plan, which is the special district, the special financing district, which is just a state corporation. And this is very important because I was looking in Title 43. In fact, it's Title 43, Section 1712, Land Use Plans is the name of the title. You know, you were just talking about government, buying up these massive swaths of land. You know, this is in Section, looks like Section E, number 3, it says, provided that nothing in this section shall prevent a wholly owned government corporation from acquiring and holding rights as a citizen under the mining law of 1872. I want to read that again. Okay? Provided that nothing in this section shall prevent a wholly owned government corporation from acquiring and holding rights as a citizen under mining law of 1872. I mean, that, come on, folks. When you hear that, first of all, government owns corporations, I mean, that alone means the government is a corporation. nation. But second, the government considers itself a citizen and gives itself all of the rights of a citizen, which incidentally means that it can be sued and sue, which is actually a good thing. But for the most part, the fact that this is the case, the fact that statements like these are made, and the fact that government, besides federal lands, that government is the landholder of not only land but real estate, like you wouldn't believe when you get into the CAFR reports and the actual land holdings. It's just amazing. Now, one of the other things I wanted to ask you is somewhere in there, I kind of lost it because there's so much in Title 43, but it specifically stated that as long as you are tending to the land and show that you have mined and have made at least $100 from your efforts, then you have title to the land, title to the mining claim on the land. Is that true?
Absolutely. You just have to, for the mining property, you have to have a valuable discovery. That's the very first thing in the mining law. And once you've done, let me see if I can do this pretty simply. What this is a grant. When you have possessory title, and which we do under the mining law, it's right there. Folks, anybody who wants to read this stuff, you can read it yourself now. The Jefferson Mining District, the newly created mining district, it's one of the first that's been created in a long, long time to reassert something that comes out of Section 1712, a very big power that sits in there for people. But the mining law itself is about that. That you get the property, you do get possessory title. That is a grant, and that is a legislative grant, which has a whole other way of dealing with it. You just know it's not legislation. You pointed out, always fascinating what you point out, what interests you, Clint, really, because you just pointed out, I'm going to run it in reverse on you on how this actually works. The government, we understand, and you found out in your Corporation Nation video about government being corporation, and I told you, at least since 53, the Uniform Model Business Corporation Act, we can kind of see all these states are corporations, but let me suggest to you about the holding as a citizen. That's not government actually dictating that. That is because of the nature and character of the mineral estate itself. The mineral estate is so unique and so special. That it even makes governments become as citizens. They can't hold any more than just as a citizen. Even it's only actually holding as a proprietor, any other proprietor. This is a fascinating view of what the limit of a government actually is with regard to soil. I haven't looked back. You understand, you know this, when the Constitution was made, after the Declaration of Independence, a bunch of compacts were made with England to lock us back into the commercial nexus. We got formed under a constitution that was actually a political jurisdiction. When people read international law, which is actually where I started reading after I wanted to know where America went, you're going to find out that actual sovereignty has about five main elements, only one of which is political, which means that the United States is only one-fifth of an actual sovereign, actually, when you get looking at it. However, the mineral estate, its character is such that it's just like private property in the sense of a tangible property. And that can only be held as a people, just you and me. The government can't hold as the government. In fact, it can't even convey as a government. It conveys and possesses as a mere proprietor. And I mentioned the Menard Run oil case of 2009. If you look that up, you'll see where the court act just says that again. It says the Forest Service, as an agent, is a mere proprietor over the surface estate. It does not hold as the sovereign. So this is very important to me when I see this, that when you deal with the government inside the context of the mining law and the mineral estate that was granted, you're dealing with it not as a sovereign, but as a proprietor. Now you tell me how, as a proprietor, a sole proprietor even of the surface estate, how it has any power under eminent domain.
Well, and I think this is interesting, too, because... Now, one of the things that I've been looking at a lot lately is the just brutal privatization of everything, stemming from Bush's the first George Bush presidential directive. I can't remember what the number was, but it was literally privatization of infrastructure. So when we see that government, which basically has to show on its books that it's somewhat a non-profit entity. When you see government privatizing everything and of course investing in all of these corporations, you could see the answer to that problem. So if a corporation is then purchasing these lands on behalf of government, if government creates these corporations, these holding companies, these massive non-profit entities, non-governmental organizations, which then lay claim to this land, then you've bypassed what you just said, which is that the government cannot be the holder of the land in the form that a government is the corporation. So one of the major problems we have right now facing us is literally the privatization of everything on by government. Government is doing it, you know, without the will of the people. It's privatizing everything.
Well, that's one of the techniques and tactics we have to look at. But let me just suggest, if the government can't even do it, then the local municipalities, which are political subdivisions, if people look this stuff up, they see corporation written all over this. Political subdivision, it's like a GM having subdivisions of its car-making capacity. The governments are only getting away with it because nobody is asserting their property rights. I've just given a partial answer to some of this. If you challenge the fact of its status to come under by eminent domain based under the excuse, it may not hold up when it's just a mere proprietor. I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm just saying it's there to do, and if you don't, then you're going to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are your only advocate. That's the God honest truth. Can't trust an attorney. Anyway, this is Clint Richardson. We're going to be back with Story Behind the Story and America in Jeopardy after the break.
Camping, hiking, backpacking, Alice Packs, military surplus, tactical gear. The list goes on and on and on. You can find it at CJL Enterprise. That's ENTERPRIZE.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. We are open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year on the web. Again, it's CJL Enter, ENTERPRIZE.com. CJL Enterprise.com. You can call us at 816-359-7945. CJL Enterprise.
Ah! Gotcha! Help me, sir!
Stand down!
Well, thank you, sir. I think you saved my life.
Evidence, Johnson. Even raccoons respect the authority of a man with good nutrition. That's me. Now, what's going on here?
Well, he started it, sir. I was trying to clean his fish, and he tried to take it from me.
Yeah, well, you must have looked a little wimpy.
Sir, I'm hungry.
Johnson, if you'd have brought your own supply of freeze-dried food from the freeze-dry guy, like I told you, you wouldn't have to be out here picking on the cute little animals.
Oh, I'd give anything for a big chunk of protein right now.
Johnson, don't salivate. It's unbecoming a Marine.
I'm sorry, sir. I should have called the freeze-dry guy.
Bugged you, Donut Johnson. You're suffering your MREs, and I'm enjoying chicken a la king and lasagna and bacon and eggs for breakfast.
Sir, shut up.
Johnson?
Sorry, sir.
Get your own supply of the best long-term storage food available. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com.
Last thing the men behind the curtain want is a conscious, informed public capable of critical thinking, which is why a continually fraudulent zeitgeist is output via religion, the mass media, and the educational system. They seek to keep you in a distracted, naive bubble, and they are doing a damn good job of it.
President Bush signed a formal agreement that will end the United States as we know it. And he took the step without approval from either the U.S. Congress or the people of the United States.
Illuminati, you come to take control. You can take my heartbeat, but you can break my soul. We all shall be free.
The Micro Effect, Kamiyai, Idaho, where every day is a holiday.
Yes, sir!